No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I would be lost without my smartphone. I use it for directions, to find things to do, and most importantly, where to eat. I rely on it as a digital music player to enhance my experience as I explore a new place. Oh, and sometimes I even use it to make calls and stuff. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are, too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio and love all things tech. And we're making Wednesdays the new Fridays, just like Loki did on Disney Plus. That being said, we're going to be moving a classic episode to today, Wednesday, because the episode I am currently working on is not just technical, it also has a lot of historical elements to it, and it's involving a lot of digging around in old articles and putting things together, and I'm just running a little behind. So our classic episode is moving up from Friday to Wednesday, and we're going to do an episode called The Mythology of Area 51. Area 51, of course, being the most famous secret facility in the world. It is a place that is connected to all sorts of different legends, from aliens to crazy military experiments and more. And so this episode really goes in to explore that. I hope you enjoy. We are, in fact, going to be concluding our trilogy of episodes about Area 51 in parts 1 and 2, if you haven't listened to them already. We really went over the history of the facility and what actually goes on there, mm-hmm. and covered everything from the reason why it was built in the first place to the various spy planes and different technologies that were tested at mm-hmm. that facility. This episode, we're looking at the crazy.
Yes, sir. We are looking at all of the rumors, conspiracy theories, and let's just say unsupported anecdotes.
Yeah.
To be diplomatic.
That's very diplomatic. Yeah. So quick rundown, just so that we're all on the same page. Area 51, also known as Groom Lake, is a facility. It's out in Nevada. It's near the Nevada test site where a lot of nuclear tests were held. In fact, some during the lifetime of Area 51.
That's right.
It is run by the CIA and the Air Force. Lockheed is essentially the main contractor that does work there. It's not the only one. We've seen some other aircraft from different companies tested at that facility as well. And the whole purpose of it is to be remote from everywhere else so that secret tests of top secret spy technology can happen without anyone learning about it. Because as we've said, if you want to be an effective spy, part of that means people can't be aware of the tools that you have at your disposal.
Right. Yeah. And which, as we say, that's why it is in a Goldilocks zone for its purpose. Right.
Yeah.
One of my favorite points that you made in the previous episode, I believe it was the first installment, was that this was just far enough away to be so inconvenient to get to that people wouldn't try.
Yeah, it's a remote desert location on a dry lake bed. Mm-hmm. And so it was close enough where you could get supplies mm-hmm. from places like Las Vegas, which is less than 100 miles away. But far enough away where, you know, your casual traveler is unlikely to stumble upon it, especially once you start posting lots of warning signs with scary wording on it, warning people away.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the fact that it is remote, the fact that you do have these signs that warn people away, the fact that you have to bring people in to work at this facility, and most of them are commuting in maybe on a weekly basis, which means you have to figure out how do you transport them from some place like Las Vegas to the actual facility itself. All of that means that you're leaving just enough traces mm-hmm. to really start to pique people's interest, right?
Yeah, it's tantalizing. Oh, and point of order for the listeners out there, Jonathan, we should probably tell everybody, check out the first two episodes of this before you listen to this one.
Right. It'll make this make... I can't say more sense, but you'll at least understand the references.
That's the best way to say
it. Yeah. So yeah, we've got just enough information mm-hmm. for the typical person to say, I really want to know what's happening there. Mm-hmm. And because of the security features that are in place, including roving bands, which mm-hmm. we'll talk about a little bit later of security personnel, it means that you end up having to fill in a lot of gaps. And when that happens, when people are given the leeway to try and fill in, like there's the big here there be dragons on the map.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where you get the dragons, right? You're mm-hmm. like, well, I don't know what's out there. It's probably dangerous, so we're just going to slap dragons on it and call it a day.
Yeah, which is, you know, at heart a valuable instinct to have, right? It's caution, but what's happened here is that, as we're going to see, one thing with a grain of truth, such as, oh, there's something I'm not allowed to go see, became embellished and mm-hmm. then exaggerated. And many times, the people saying these things sincerely do believe this. They're not hucksters, right?
Yeah, yeah. This isn't necessarily someone who's trying to get a book deal or trying to get, on the talk show circuit. It may be someone who has just enough information to leap to some conclusions that are not supportable. Also, we should say, there are times where people make guesses where either they latch on to something that is actually true or they've mm-hmm. got part of the story. So just because something is a theory or a rumor or a conspiracy of some sort doesn't mean that there's nothing there, right?
Right.
So here's a great example, and it's one of the more grounded, no pun intended, examples of the mythology around Area 51. There's the myth that there is a giant subterranean network of tunnels and facilities that are underneath the ground. So that way, when you get that overhead view of Area 51, keep in mind, Area 51 is restricted airspace. It goes all the way up into space.
Yep.
But there are satellites since the 1980s that have taken multiple images of that area. So if you know that, in fact, you're going to be photographed from space, that seems logical that you would want to go underground, right?
Sure.
So
yeah.
You can understand why people would say, oh, well, it makes sense. You want to have that secrecy. You can no longer depend upon it above ground, so you have to go below.
Mm-hmm.
But this raises some logistical issues, right?
Yeah. How do you build an underground base and keep it quiet, especially, as we said in the history podcast, the construction workers that were taken out there probably would have known something about it because they would have been the ones digging.
Yeah, I mean, and digging is a big deal. You're talking about a subterranean network. That's a lot of earth that you have to move.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do you have to move it, you then have to figure out what do you do with the earth you have taken. You know, when you create a hole,
Mm-hmm. Right.
That dirt doesn't just magically disappear, right? You have to put it someplace. Mm-hmm. And so that's a logistical issue. And it's an enormous type of endeavor to undertake. I mean, imagine having to create something, a network of tunnels that is stable enough to support the weight of whatever's above it. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the idea of like level upon level of subterranean lair, like, you know, Dr. Evil style.
Right.
It's an enormous task, and it would have required such a huge investment in manpower, mm-hmm. let alone, I mean, don't even think about the cost financially.
Right.
Just the practical manpower necessary to make it. It's not likely. And there are some rumors that go so far as to suggest that there's an entire underground network of tunnels that connect various bases together.
Right. Yeah.
And really, when you think of the engineering challenge that represents and the construction that is required, you realize that while it might be technologically possible for us to do it, mm-hmm. it is not really feasible to do it secretly where you have not left any trace at all in the whole process.
Right. Now, and I think that's a really good distinction, because it's not just plausible, but it is probable that there is some sort of below the ground construction at Roswell at Area 51, in that when you build things, there might be a basement, there might be a safe room,
right.
Something like that. But that is a far, far cry from, what do we have here? What's the biggest record, Jonathan?
50 stories.
50 stories. Yes.
Yeah. Imagine a 50 story skyscraper, but underground.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you've ever seen a skyscraper being built, you know, this is a process that takes some time. And we here at How Stuff Works, we moved into this, you know, we're in an office that has recently, over the last maybe 5 or 6 years, seen a lot of growth with the buildings around us. And so we've actually watched year over year as skyscrapers mm-hmm. were being built. And it takes a really long time. And I know people would say, yeah, but this is a top secret establishment. You know, they'd really pour a lot into it. If you've ever seen the government at work, the
right.
U.S. government at work, speed is not one of the adjectives you would typically use.
Right. Where if the U.S. government was a superhero, it would probably not be the Flash.
No,
I mean, everyone knows that.
Maybe the Blob.
Yeah, I was going to go safe with Captain America.
Okay. Well, all right. I was immediately going to all the villains. I was thinking the Blob or maybe the Juggernaut, you know?
Oh, the Juggernaut's cool, though.
Yeah.
That's a different podcast. We've got to get to one of the biggest things here, the biggest conspiracies we hear about with Area 51. Well, first off, spoiler alert, the real conspiracy is, are there secret spy planes?
Yes, yeah. There are.
And
that's exactly what it's for.
And that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, first off, the fact that that can even be possible is kind of frightening.
We talked in the last couple of podcasts about some of the aircraft that were under development there that remained secret a good 20 years after they had finished testing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they were unveiled. There was one that I think had a run from 83 to 85, something like that. And it wasn't acknowledged by the government until 96, which was the first time anyone outside of that program had seen it. And I think that was maybe Tacit Blue.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of those that just when you saw the aircraft, you thought, wow, what a weird looking thing. I can't believe that this remained a secret. Granted, they only built two of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they were under strict wraps over at Area 51. I mean, it never got further out from that area. Like even the tests would be done at night. So
right.
It limited the potential of even being spotted. So.
But they were the genuine articles of conspiracy were indeed spotted in the sky. And that brings us to, as we were saying, the biggest part of the Area 51 mythology.
Are you talking UFOs?
UFOs?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. We're UFO-ing officially.
Yeah. Unidentified flying objects, UFOs, more often than not, they are attributed to being alien, as
right.
in extraterrestrial in
mm-hmm.
nature.
Yeah.
Area 51 features heavily in tons of different alien stories, both mm-hmm. Both the kind that we see on the big screen, like Independence Day.
Yeah, I was thinking
the famous sequence where they go down to Area 51, where they have not just aliens, but their hardware
mm-hmm.
That has been studied for years. And, you know, it's revealed that a lot of
technology we depend upon today has been reverse engineered from this alien technology.
Still can't build a decent spaceship, though, apparently.
No, we can't build a decent spaceship. However, we have figured out that you can introduce a computer virus as long as you have an Apple MacBook laptop.
Which, to this day, to this day, my friend, that still bothered me.
Yeah.
Yeah, spoiler alert again, guys. But yeah, so people started seeing UFOs, and it is correct to call them that because I think this is one of the distinctions that we're about to make, right?
Yeah.
A UFO, unidentified flying object, is simply that.
Yeah, it just means that you personally cannot identify what that object is. It doesn't mean it's unidentifiable.
Right.
It may very well be that there's a small group of people who know exactly what that object is, like the stealth technology we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Those stealth programs, when they were under development, were strict secrets, and only a few people, relatively few people, knew about them. Anyone outside that who would have seen one of these aircraft flying around, naturally, they would not be able to identify it. There was no correlative they could mm-hmm. say, oh, this looked like a such and such. These things looked really crazy. So calling it a UFO is perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot identify it. Making the leap from UFO to alien is a little bit of a problem. So this brings us to probably the most famous alien incident in all of United States history, something that factors into numerous, I'd say dozens, if not hundreds, of different conspiracy theories.
Absolutely.
The Roswell incident. Now, Roswell is in New Mexico, which, for those of you who are not in the United States, is a completely separate state from Nevada.
It's in a completely different place. And, you know, sometimes as a pet peeve of mine, Jonathan, is that people often conflate Area 51 or Groom Lake and the incident in Roswell.
Right. And so two things. These are incidents separated both in space and time.
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah.
Roswell, New Mexico is hundreds of miles away from Area 51, like almost 1,000 miles away. Mm-hmm. I think it's somewhere around 800 miles away. 880, actually, 1,416 kilometers. According to Google Maps. Thank you, Google Maps, for letting me know how far apart Roswell, New Mexico and Area 51 are.
That's what they're there for.
That's exactly it. So, by the way, don't rely upon Google Maps for turn-by-turn directions to Area 51. You'll just end up in Las Vegas.
Did you do it by driving or walking?
I did it by driving, although walking would have been hilarious. Walking would have been like, at this point, people are going to ask you to turn around. Or at this point, you've probably died of dehydration. So the other thing I said was that they're separated by time.
Yeah.
The Roswell incident happened on July 2nd, 1947. So for those of you who listened to our first episode about Area 51, you remember that it was the mid-1950s
mm-hmm.
when the CIA settled on Groom Lake as the future home of Area 51. It was actually 1955 was when construction began.
Mm-hmm.
So this is almost a decade apart of these two events. So then you have the actual story of the Roswell incident is that some people in Roswell, New Mexico, saw some strange floating objects that they could not identify. So unidentified flying objects. Sometimes they're referred to as being kind of disc-shaped, but
mm-hmm.
part of the problem is that we're so far distanced from the initial event that the story has not remained consistent through all the different retellings.
Yeah, and I can speak to a little bit of that because we have some copies of the newspaper articles that changed. And because they changed, there's a very interesting thing here. It's the interpretation of that. People who believe that there was some sort of extraterrestrial incident,
mm-hmm.
Somebody managed to drive a spacecraft well enough to get to Earth.
But not well enough to stay above Earth.
Right. And then the news found out about it and they got shut down. They had to change their story. Or did they just correct the reporting when they had more information?
Right.
That's a good question.
Right. Did some gentleman wearing black suits and sunglasses show up at the newspaper and say, you need to address this.
I mean, and Jonathan, that's possible, but if it happened, it wasn't because of aliens.
That's right. So get moving on. We're talking about the crash. just spotting these objects in the air wasn't the only thing that happened with the Roswell incident. What specifically went on from there was that some people found debris on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it was described as being shiny and metallic in nature. No one was really sure what it was actually made of at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so this incident started to become embellished upon over time. In fact, there's some versions of the story where they didn't just find physical debris from some flying object, but also bodies.
Ah, yes.
And this is where we get into the alien stuff, where supposedly there were these bodies of creatures that had unusual features, and they were whisked away by the government. And ultimately, some people say that they went to Area 51. Area 51's purpose was not to study strange materials, although we did eventually get some Soviet aircraft at Area 51 where they were tested, like the MiGs. But it's not meant to be a scientific laboratory. That's not the purpose of Area 51. So it would make no sense to send any kind of extraterrestrials there. It also doesn't make sense to send extraterrestrial bodies to a place that hasn't been built yet.
Right.
That's a big one.
It's a bump in the road, my friend.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a problem with the story. The official story from the government was that the debris came from weather balloons and that there were no bodies. In fact, we should say right now, there's no evidence at all that anyone ever came across a body. That was something that was added to this story over time.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. That autopsy on YouTube is most likely a hoax.
Oh,
it's a hoax.
There are special effects, experts who have actually commented on it and somewhat derisively. Somewhere like they should have hired me. I could have done a much better job.
But there is no hard evidence that there was, even from the debris they found.
Yeah.
When they were looking at it, because there really was debris, right?
Yeah.
And they really did find it, but they didn't find enough to have built an entire thing.
Yeah.
Could carry a person.
No. So the official story from the government was that these were weather balloons. They were meant specifically to study the weather at high altitudes. Now, as it turns out, that's not the real story, but we'll get to there in a second.
We'll be back to talk about more mythology of Area 51 in just a moment.
No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I can't fly without my portable chargers and noise-canceling headphones keeping me immersed, and I'd be lost without my smartphone. In a new place, it's my connection to the familiar. I rely on it to get directions around town, I use my smartphone to look up things to do, or, most importantly, where to eat. In countries where I don't speak the language, my phone becomes a universal translator. And heck, it can double as a digital camera, giving me the opportunity to snap unforgettable pictures of the sights that inspire me and fill me with joy. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
So this was one of those things where people were saying, doesn't look like any weather balloon I've ever seen, which is true. It didn't.
I've seen both balloons and the weather, sir.
Yeah, this is neither of those two things. So moving on to the you know, kind of looking at the story another way.
Yeah.
One version of this that I was not aware of until a friend of the show, Nate Langson, he's the editor of wired.co.uk.
Mm-hmm.
He turned me on to this. I had never heard about this. It's a book written by Annie Jacobson called Area 51, An Uncensored History of America's Top Secret Military Base. Now, full disclosure, I have not read this book yet.
Okay.
I read a synopsis of the book and a synopsis of the story we're about to cover. So this may not actually be accurate to the book itself. I want to make that clear.
That's fair.
I've also heard that most of the book is pretty much what we covered in our first two episodes of the podcast, a very thorough description of the history of Area 51, but there's a section, apparently, devoted to the Roswell incident and Area 51's supposed involvement in that, in which the story gets even weirder, I think, than aliens. And this story involves Nazis and communists. So, you know, it's only missing Indiana Jones to make it really a Hollywood film. So the story that she tells, according to a source, I don't know what her source was.
A source.
I don't know if she names the source in the book.
Mm-hmm.
The synopsis I said anonymous, but again, I haven't read the book.
Right.
But according to the synopsis, the story is that a Nazi doctor, Joseph Mengele, actually, the SS officer, who survived the World War II and then eventually escaped to South America, that Mengele had worked on behalf of Joseph Stalin, doing these horrific procedures on children, resulting in children around the age of 12 with abnormally shaped heads, large eyes that are of an odd shape.
Mm-hmm.
And that the whole idea was that they were going to pilot some simple aircraft to fly around the United States and land and essentially stir crap up and scare people.
Yeah, exactly. This idea that they would... This idea that they would fake aliens.
Yeah. In order to create a panic. Essentially doing a War of the Worlds type event, one step closer to reality.
That's a good comparison.
War of the Worlds, for those who don't remember or don't know what this is. It was an Orson Welles project, a radio program that was portrayed in such a way that people who tuned in without knowing that it was actually a fictionalized radio program began to think that there was actually an alien invasion happening. It was this sort of famous little blip on the radar of people freaking out because they weren't aware that, in fact, it was a fictional account. Something that we still see today with things like mermaids. At any rate, that's enough commentary on that. But yeah, the story that she relays is that Mengele had done these horrific procedures and that the bodies found at the Roswell incident, which remember, there was never any evidence that bodies were found, were in fact human children that then were whisked away. I think there are some big problems with this particular story. Problem number one, Mengele was on the run from the Soviets.
Right.
He did not. I mean, the Soviets were the ones who were approaching when Hitler committed suicide. Right. They rather than be captured by the Soviets, Hitler committed suicide, and Mengele was trying to escape with records that he had created at Auschwitz.
Mm-hmm.
So he eventually escaped Germany. He did at one point go back into Soviet occupied territory in order to retrieve some of these documents, but he evaded capture and eventually escaped to South America and then moved around quite a bit while
on the run.
Yeah. Yeah. He was being pursued by agents, both Soviet and American.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's unlikely that he would have collaborated with Joseph Stalin, mm-hmm. and certainly unlikely that he would have been allowed to escape the Soviets.
Well. Yeah.
So that already is a problem. Secondly, it would be a real problem, the idea of people being fooled long enough to not realize these were humans.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then there's the other question. Why would they crash there?
Yeah.
And not in a more occupied place? Why not New York City or something like that? Why, I don't know, they probably get spotted, but then also, and this is a cruel thing to say, but, why would you specifically need that one very evil man to do that sort of operation?
Right. Right. Exactly.
It's not like,
if you're going to do something so inhuman, narratively, it's a great story in the sense that there only one person is this twisted to pull this off.
Right.
But in reality, we know, unfortunately, that's not the case. That mm-hmm. if you really did have the will to do something this horrible, you could probably do it without having to go after the devil himself, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole story is meant to appeal to our dark imaginations. And it's a terrible thing, but it's also one of those things that you could say, yeah, I can imagine this actually playing out in some way. Ultimately, you also have to ask the question, what's the effect you're going for? If the effect you're going for is to cause a panic, I can't think of anything that would have caused a bigger panic than having Soviet airmen being able to land in U.S. territory without any alien cover story. You don't need that to cause a scare. There's really no benefit here. Like the entire operation does not seem to have an actual return on investment. So it doesn't make sense from that perspective either.
Yeah.
So
the Nazis, though, are involved in some other conspiracy theories about Area 51, like the UFOs that are seen are a product of, you know, Nazi experiments toward the close of the war.
Sure.
And a lot of that comes from a very real and kind of frightening thing that the United States did with Operation Paperclip, which you know about. When they brought over some surviving scientists from Germany.
Right. Yeah. When you get the rocket scientists specifically who worked over in Germany to then come to the United States and continue their work in science and rocketry specifically. But now they're working for a different boss. They're working for the United States government. And partly because they're getting guarantees from the U.S. government that they won't be tried as criminals for their work for the Nazi regime. So, yeah, there's certain real things that were happening in history that were probably enough to help fuel this kind of conspiracy here in the United States. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you didn't have to look far to see real instances of some pretty shady dealings on both sides, but without having to make stuff up.
Right. And now, also, one thing that didn't help the government's case, in as far as their official story goes, is that it turned out they were telling the truth, but telling it slant, as Emily Dickinson would say.
Right. They were not weather balloons that were being deployed out over in New Mexico.
They were balloons, though.
Yeah, they were balloons that were part of a spy program called Project Mogul, which was a top secret experiment using high altitude balloons that were carrying microphones. And the idea was the microphones would be able to detect sounds from Soviet nuclear tests so that we in the United States would have a clue when that was going on. And that would help us kind of know how far along the Soviets were with their nuclear program compared to our own nuclear program.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, again, this need for secrecy. We didn't want the Soviets to know that we, in fact, had developed this technology to listen out for these sound waves, because we didn't want them to try and come up with different ways of testing their nuclear arms and therefore hiding it from us.
Yeah, or so, reverse engineering it and hearing what we're doing.
Exactly. That's also another good point. So the cover story of weather balloons was necessary to protect the secrecy of the spy program, but it had nothing to do with aliens. It had everything to do with spying. It might have even been to the government's benefit that people were latching on to the alien story because it took attention away from what it was really meant to do. So there's not a whole lot of incentive upon the government's part to come out and say specifically, guys, no, it's not aliens, because it helped keep the attention away. But you don't want it to, you don't want that story to run rampant either, because it could legitimately start causing either a panic or just a growing distrust in the government itself.
Sure. And they don't need any help with that.
That's
regardless
right.
of what your political beliefs are. We, speaking of beliefs, this is going to be a lot of fun, for me personally, I think for you too, because one thing that always keeps the Area 51 legends alive is that there, it seems like every year there's someone who comes out and says, well, I was person X at place Y and I know the truth.
Right.
And now I will finally reveal it.
And you're thinking of someone specific in this case, right?
I am specifically thinking of Bob Lazar.
Yeah, Robert Lazar, or Bob Lazar, who claimed to have worked on a project in which the military had come into possession of alien technology. And his job was to reverse engineer that alien technology to learn how it works, mm-hmm. so that we could take advantage of that tech here on Earth, and thus kind of leap forward what would normally be the process of developing tech. So instead of, you know, constantly testing and improving and refining, we could jump straight ahead, you know, skip 8 steps in that
right.
process and jump straight to, you know, miraculous smartphones that react to our touch, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so he claimed that he had worked at a facility that was near Groom Lake. So not technically at Area 51, but adjacent to it.
It was the real secret place. It's called S4.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so secret that it didn't even get a full name. It just gets a letter and a number designation. And he said that it housed no fewer than 9 spacecraft. Here's the thing, that a lot of his claims to his background don't check out.
Right.
Right. Like,
yeah.
he claims to have advanced degrees from MIT and from Caltech, but there's no record of him there. Now, granted, some people say that that's evidence of the conspiracy.
He says so.
Yeah. That, in fact, this shows that the government was so interested in keeping it a secret that they have wiped clean his background. Although, to do that, you would also have to wipe clean the memories of every professor and every student who would have
mm-hmm.
also attended.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that this kind of domino effect, how wide those ripples would have to go in order for this to remain an effective secret, it becomes unmanageable at some point.
Wouldn't it be easier? At this point, my question would be, for many of these cases, is why did someone go to such great lengths to keep you alive?
Yeah.
Because from a government's perspective, we know that if they're picking one kind of skullduggery, they'll pick the easier one, which is usually an assisted fall off a building
yeah.
or something like that.
Well, you know, assassination is just off the table, right?
Right.
That,
oh,
that
yeah.
can never be done. Like, yeah, how do you, if it did come down to there's this one person who has tons of information. Like, it's essentially Snowden.
Yeah, there's
right?
an Edward Snowden.
There's an Edward Snowden of Area 51 who is ready. He has access to all the information. He's ready to spill the beans.
Mm-hmm.
You want to discredit him. You don't go to every single person in his past.
Don't tell anybody about this guy.
Right. Yeah, it's just not practical, right? It would be a monumental task. So essentially what we're getting around to is that Lazar's his claims to his credentials
mm-hmm.
are suspect.
Right. And that is a very diplomatic way to put it. Of course, you know, we're also showing that his side of it is that someone is erasing his past to discredit him, as you said. You know, Jonathan, recently, Mr. Lazar, in the past few years, went back into the public eye. Now, I mean, I guess more into the mainstream public eye, and he was asked to react to the CIA's official admittance of Area 51's existence,
mm-hmm.
which, as we know, didn't happen for a little while. And he said he was not impressed because this was a very tiny baby step forward. I think that's the quote he used. And he was waiting for them to reveal S4, which is the site he says he worked at, reverse
right.
engineering these things. Now, he has many, many claims. He speaks at length about interspecial politics, about injuries he's suffered by technology that we won't hear about for several decades. But I really like the point you made that one of the other things people who believe him see as proof is what they perceive as a inexplicable jump in technology, right?
Right. Well, the truth is that if you look at any technology closely enough, you will see incremental improvements. It's very, very rare that we have someone come out with a brand new piece of technology that has no precedent to it.
Right. Even like, Philo Farnsworth.
Yeah, exactly. Television. Perfect example. So, yeah, you look at these things like television was really building upon the developments of radio. And you think, OK, well, what about Tesla and Marconi? Well, they were working on research that had preceded them as well. Mm-hmm. These are all if you really dig down into it, you know, you look at the invention of the light bulb, you look at all of these sort of inventions that we take for granted. We like the stories that say this inventor came up with this idea and mm-hmm. implemented it, and now it exists. I mean, before it never did.
Sure.
Usually the truth is much more complicated with lots of different things leading into that invention, including earlier inventions that may not have been practical, but showed a working concept. And then this other inventor, like Thomas Edison,
right.
comes along and takes that concept and makes it practical. So now it's something that we can actually use, as opposed to just a cool idea, but we didn't know how to you know, capitalize mm-hmm. on it. So, you know, I think most of the advances we've seen have over the decades have been examples of this, where people have made incremental improvements and maybe grabbed together multiple pieces of technology and then packaged them in such a way that it's a really compelling piece of tech. But if you break it down component by component, you start to see the actual process of this creating something, refining it, tweaking it, mm-hmm. putting it out again, refining it again. I don't see any enormous leaps where someone has jumped well ahead of everywhere else. Maybe Claude Shannon and his computer science with using binary logic. His approach to computer science was pretty much fully formed, but that's kind of similar to Albert Einstein and his theories of relativity. These were ideas that both men had developed over years, and then they presented them as complete pictures. So to us, the outsiders,
right.
it looks like a person just came up with a brilliant process fully formed instantaneously. The truth is it actually took several years to build that up. And even then they were building on previous thoughts mm-hmm. and knowledge. They were just incorporating it in a new way.
Yeah, but what about the lasers?
Okay, so lasers are an issue, right? I'm glad you brought up lasers. One of the things that has often been attributed to Area 51 is energy weapons. Mm-hmm. So this ties into the Strategic Defense Initiative, often referred to derisively as
Star Wars.
Yeah, this was the program in the 1980s, and I promise that I will do an episode about the Star Wars program that will go into full detail. I know I've got a lot of listeners who have asked me to do it, and I really want to at some point, but it's going to be a little bit further down the road. But it's, you know, the whole idea was that it was going to be a system that would shoot down incoming ICBMs, mm-hmm. intercontinental ballistic missiles. This was the height of the Cold War. 1980s, I mean, propaganda was ridiculous in both the Soviet Union and the United States. I grew up in that era, and I remember, like, the Russians being the bad guys all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, from everything from Red Dawn to Rocky IV. So anyway, or was it three? It might have been three, Rocky III. At any rate, the idea here was that the energy weapons that would shoot down these missiles were supposedly under development at Area 51. Again, not really the purpose for Area 51. I mean, you could understand them testing such a device because that is kind of what they were doing, but they were mostly testing airborne things, not ground to air technology. It was mostly aircraft that they were really focusing on.
And not offensive aircraft, just spycraft.
Yeah. I mean, some of the drones they worked on probably had offensive capabilities,
but it was mostly
reconnaissance type stuff. We've got more to say about the mythology of Area 51 after this quick break. No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I can't fly without my portable chargers and noise-canceling headphones keeping me immersed, and I'd be lost without my smartphone. In a new place, it's my connection to the familiar. I rely on it to get directions around town. I use my smartphone to look up things to do or, most importantly, where to eat. In countries where I don't speak the language, my phone becomes a universal translator. And heck, it can double as a digital camera, giving me the opportunity to snap unforgettable pictures of the sights that inspire me and fill me with joy. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required. Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
So then you have the weather control devices, another very popular conspiracy theory.
Love it.
So first of all, we don't have any technology powerful enough to control the weather. Weather is an incredibly chaotic system that we do not fully understand. And before you can really control something, you have to at least have some understanding of how it works.
Now, people have conducted experiments with weather manipulation.
Yeah,
to things like influence it,
like seeding clouds,
right,
that kind of thing. But even this, we can't be fully sure how effective they are, right?
Nope.
Because here's the problem: is that you can't have a scientific consensus on whether or not something's effective unless you're able to have a control group, and you can't really have a control group with weather. I mean, you can have as close to the same elements in play,
sure,
in two different instances, and one you seed the cloud and one you don't, and then you see how much rain results. But even then, again, weather is such a complex system that you can't be completely certain that the seeding is the effective agent there.
Right. And, you know, the problem with weather is it's a chaotic system that is one massive cluster of systems.
Yeah.
So any two points you pick are ultimately in the same system.
Yeah.
So are they really, is there a control?
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. And then on top of that, you know, things like HARP, which I'm sure you guys have talked about, which was designed to actually look at interactions in the ionosphere. Now, the ionosphere around Earth can conduct electricity.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when we get a big electrical impulse in there from something like a solar flare or a coronal mass ejection, it can make the auroras at the poles really active, mm-hmm, because that's kind of the convergence point for this electric field. And so there's certainly things that interact with atmospheric phenomena, but we still can't control the weather there.
Now, it doesn't help. I'm just going to be honest with you, Jonathan.
Okay.
It does not help to dispel any of the speculation about places like HARP, you know, when it was in operation,
mm-hmm,
because the descriptions from the government and from HARP about what they were doing were just cartoonishly vague in some ways.
Oh, so, yeah. I mean, it's the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program,
right,
which already you're you're thinking there are at least a couple of words in there that I'm not entirely sure what they're supposed to mean.
Right.
And it really was about beaming energy into the ionosphere to, the goal for HAARP, at least on the government side, the military funded side, was, can we use the ionosphere as a conduit through which we can communicate with distant vehicles like submarines that are under the water? I mean, they really were hoping that this would be a way of doing that. The scientists at HAARP were mostly thinking, if we can keep getting funding for what we want to do, which is to study the ionosphere, then we should try and keep that door open for the possibility that this could be a communications tool.
Let's keep them happy.
Even if we don't think it'll really work. So,
which happens.
Yeah. That's essentially what happened with HAARP. And then eventually the military said, you know what? We're done. And they pulled the funding. So that was the story of HAARP. Well, a lot of those same stories apply to Area 51.
Right.
But there's no evidence that there were any weather control systems under development. There's certainly no evidence that anything ever did any actual weather manipulation.
Right.
So, that just doesn't really fly. And then if there's a piece of tech in science fiction, there's a chance that there's at least some story out there that there's something like that under development at Area 51.
Right.
You know, warp coils, teleporters, phasers, whatever you want to think about. I realize I was focusing mainly on Star Trek there, but but really all of that has at some time or another been attributed to Area 51.
Sure. Warp drives, teleportation devices, lightsabers.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Now we've got Star Wars. We've got there. So moving on, another host of conspiracy theories around Area 51 don't have so much to do with what was actually going on at the facility, but rather the mysterious shadowy organizations that were behind it all.
Yeah, like the real life smoking man from X-Files.
Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of these conspiracy theories involve organizations that have no official designation, or they aren't officially acknowledged by the government.
Right.
So some of them have a designation, but they're not, you know, they're not in any government files because that's how secret they are.
An alleged designation.
Yeah. So here, the big one for Area 51, at least, is the Majestic 12.
Mm-hmm.
Majestic 12 is a group that existed many years ago, according to the conspiracy lore, and included people like President Truman, as well as the head of CIA and also like top businessmen, like essentially the most powerful people in the United States at that time. And that their purpose was to solidify power and control worldwide, right? Like this was going to be like the Trilateral Commission was often referred to as being a secret organization for these sort of purposes, which is not what it was for.
No.
There are other organizations that are meant to be like think tanks that have often been kind of compared to this sort of thing.
Sure.
The Majestic 12, however, is one that appears to have been completely fabricated. There was a UFO enthusiast named William L. Moore who produced papers that he claimed proved the group's existence. But a lot of people who have looked at these papers have said that they don't hold up to scrutiny, that the signatures that are there appear to have been copied from other documents and then pasted into them, the Majestic 12, the MJ-12 papers, and that there does not appear to be any sort of evidence supporting the existence of such an organization. So if your organization isn't real, then chances are it's not actually the secret one behind Area 51.
But that's no fun. So the idea that has become, you know, common currency in a lot of these beliefs is that MJ-12 did exist, but had its world rocked when news of the extraterrestrial crash in 1947 hit them, and then they've spent the next few decades. You know what? More and more, I think maybe X-Files was inspired by some of these myths.
Well, you know, and it's very like MJ-12 shares a lot of the same kind of, traits as other shadowy, conspiratorial, most likely fictional organizations.
It's a trope for sure.
It's right up there with things like the Illuminati, for example.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then you have some real people who really do exist that have kind of helped fuel the mystique around Area 51, not necessarily, you know, purposefully setting out to define the mystique, but they're part of it. And those are the camo dudes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the folks in the Area 51 biz, the people who like to watch Area 51, not the ones who are actually working there, what they refer to these guys as camo dudes, because they tend to be wearing desert camouflage outfits. You know, they're out in Nevada, so they're wearing these kind of desert cam outfits. They travel in pairs, usually in four-wheel drive vehicles, and they are their perimeter guards, essentially, is what they serve as. So if someone starts to come close to the Area 51 borders, then they may end up encountering a pair of these camo dudes who tend to not appear to be military. The best guess is, in fact, they are probably part of some contract group that ends up doing security for things like military installations. So not official military personnel, but rather private citizens who are part of a contractor.
Right.
And their job is to firmly suggest to people that they should go somewhere else rather than try and get footage of the area.
I have a quotation for you from an incident. This is published in the Huffington Post. A UFO conspiracy film crew was detained at gunpoint at the Area 51 gate in 2012. Here's the quotation. According to a crew member, a camouflage dress guard carrying an M16 told a member of this team, "We could make you disappear and your body will never be found." I'm going to go ahead and say maybe they're playing it up, but the point is that, yes, you're not supposed to be there. As we said in the first Pew podcast, don't try to go, you guys.
Yeah, most of the reports I've read didn't have a point where the camo dudes were actively aiming weapons in their direction, but rather they were visibly armed.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. You know, it was certainly they were armed, but they weren't. I don't remember reading a whole lot of them either brandishing their weapons. Like, as far as I recall, most of the incidents involved their weapons being holstered. But they have in the past, according to a lot of reports, confiscated film back when film was a thing. Or demanded to have various equipment turned over to them. Because, again, the facility is all about spy aircraft, so you don't want footage leaking of either the facility or the aircraft that are under development there.
Right, yeah.
So it's not necessarily that big of a mystery, but the fact that you have these guys who are not easily identifiable as belonging to a specific United States government organization,
sure,
that definitely adds to that mystery.
And they're not identifying themselves. And also, to be candid, in some cases, not all, but in some cases, if you're making a film, then you want to have that sort of conflict.
Yeah.
So it's also possible that in some cases these are the threat as it is embellished, or it's possible that people are purposefully agitating the guards.
Yeah, it's definitely, without being there, we can't say for sure.
Exactly.
But both scenarios seem to be plausible to me, right? I don't know what really unfolded. It may be that the truth is somewhere in between those two scenarios, right?
Yeah, but you can't accidentally end up there.
You purposefully were trying to get there. And this is clearly an area that is off limits, and is legally off limits. Some people are, and, you know, we talked about that in the second episode of the history about how Area 51 gets a whole lot of legal leeway, in ways that other places in the United States simply do not.
Yeah.
And that also adds to this curiosity we have of Area 51. I think we've really covered kind of what drives that. The fact that, you know, human beings are curious, right? We want to know things. When we see something that we do not understand, often one of our earliest responses is, how does that work? Or what is going on here? What's really happening? Unless it's really scary, in which it's, where's the closest exit and can I run faster than Ben?
Right. Because you don't have to run the fastest.
No, just faster than the slowest person.
Right.
As long as I'm not the slowest person in the office, I'm still got a chance. Yeah. So I can certainly see, and I feel it too. I mean, I certainly have this curiosity about Area 51. Heck, just going from the baseline, most mundane description of what's going on there, there's still so many questions. Like, How do they really maintain that level of secrecy? How much does the typical worker at Area 51 know about what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
How do they make sure that people working on one project remain oblivious to everything else that's happening?
Yeah.
How do they schedule these things? What is it like being a pilot for one right. of these aircraft? I mean, there are a lot of questions that we don't have the answers to. So I think, it was a lot of fun tackling this subject. And I think it really did merit the three episodes because it is such a touchstone for everything from the political ideology from the 1950s forward to just a pop culture, touchstone.
Yeah.
Right. It's like that's the go-to for science fiction.
Now, I have a question for you.
Absolutely.
Now that we have, along with the rest of the Tech Stuff audience, explored stem to stern the ideas and the reality and the myths of Area 51, I have to ask you, what would you do if one of the strangest things turned out to be true?
I would like to think that I'm the type of skeptic who, when presented with incontrovertible evidence that something I believe to be true is in fact not true, and that something I thought was just purely made up is in fact the truth, that I would be able to accept it. Saying that and actually doing it are two different things, right? I don't know if that's how I would truly react. I like to think that if suddenly there was just pure evidence that in fact the Roswell incident involved aliens,
sure,
and that the aliens were in fact housed at Area 51 and all of these crazy conspiracy theories were actually true, I like to believe that I would be able to say, you know what? I never would have bought into this, but it turns out it was right and I was wrong. I'd like to think I could do that.
I think you would. Incontrovertible evidence then would have to be something like aliens landing at your house and saying
like, hey guys, have you seen our buddies? They showed up maybe, I don't know, 70 Earth years ago, something around there.
Right. They checked their watch first 70 Earth years ago and they're big fans of Tech Stuff.
Right.
And so
they heard that we had done an episode about Area 51. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like you're the kind of guy who would go, huh, well, yeah, okay, I guess let me call my boss.
Yeah, I'd be like, son of a... All right, well, it turns out I was a big fat head and I was wrong about everything.
That's not everything. But also, yeah, it is true that there is at least there are several conspiracies that were at work at Area 51. And we've explored those. And I guess what I would want people to take away from this is that there really is amazing, strange, science fiction, action thriller movie level stuff there.
Yeah.
It just may not be what people are claiming it is.
Right. That doesn't mean it's, not interesting. It certainly is. And it's really an evidence of human achievement for both an engineering side and just a secrecy keeping side, because it's really hard to keep those secrets. So I do suspect that they do that by managing how many people are allowed to know any one thing at any one time. Otherwise, loose lips. I hope you enjoyed that classic episode of Tech Stuff. I really enjoy reading, writing, researching about Area 51. One of my favorite articles I ever wrote for How Stuff Works back when I was writing for them was on how Area 51 works. It was also one of my longest articles I ever wrote, to the point where my editor was suggesting that I cut out a couple of segments, but I felt like it really added, some character and flavor to the piece. So I fought for it, and ultimately it all went in. I honestly don't know if that paid off. I was not looking at the analytics for that article. Maybe people dropped off way before then. But it was a fun experience, and I'm glad we got a chance to revisit it. Tomorrow, you will have a new episode of Smart Talks with IBM in this feed. And then on Friday, you will hear the episode that I've been working on, but has so far been a little slow to come together. I can't tell you what it's about just yet, except I'll say, darling, it's better down where it's wetter under the sea. But that's as much as I can say. All right. If you have suggestions for topics I should cover on Tech Stuff, whether it's a technology, a company, a trend in tech, a specific product, maybe, let me know. Send me a message. Best way to do that is on Twitter. The handle for the show is TechStuffHSW. And I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I would be lost without my smartphone. I use it for directions, to find things to do, and most importantly, where to eat. I rely on it as a digital music player to enhance my experience as I explore a new place. Oh, and sometimes I even use it to make calls and stuff. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are, too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Variety is back with its annual Entertainment Marketing Summit on April 24th at the luxurious Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. This must-attend event for entertainment marketers will feature conversations with leaders from Netflix, Paramount, Activision, Mattel, LA Rams, Google, and more. Plus, an exclusive keynote conversation with Paris Hilton. The networking opportunities are unbeatable. And once you register, you can start chatting with other registrants to plan a meetup at the lunch or cocktail hour. Limited tickets are available, so secure your spot today at events.variety.com.